So I think the first thing is actually just to stop thinking about life in terms of documents and forms. We already know this is better for customers, it's better for industry, it actually frees up our resource to do the things that we're meant to be doing, which is that specialist legal advice. Technology only works if there are good standards to start with, and technology only works when you have good data.
Hello, welcome to Property with a View. I'm Mike Harlow, Director of Customer Strategy at Land Registry, and this series of podcasts on behalf of the Digital Property Market Steering Group talks to leaders from across the property market about how we can transform the process of conveyancing residential and commercial, principally by the introduction of or use of new technology, which is the main topic of conversation today, because I'm joined by Maria Harris, who will be known to many of you. Maria has a background in the financial sector, in particular in digital mortgages, but has taken quite a leading role in driving transformation in the residential conveyancing sector. So, Maria, many thanks for joining us. Please tell us a little bit about your background, why you're interested in this, and what you've been doing in recent years, because you've taken a lot of things on and taken a lot of leading roles. So what drives you, what are you doing?
It's a great question. It's my pleasure to be here. Thank you for having me on. So I guess if I start with a kind of potted history of my background. So before I worked in mortgages, I actually used to run big contact centres for British Airways and then for Npower. So I worked in different industries and kind of fell into banking in 2006 without much of a plan, and just happened to be that I was in mortgages. So I was mortgage distribution for HBOS as we were going into the financial crisis, which then became Lloyds Banking Group. So I've done a few different bits of mortgages, and I kind of fell in love with the industry. I love how dynamic it is. I love people. I love houses. I love helping people to buy their house and all of that kind of stuff. So I worked with a few different types of lenders, did a few mergers, that kind of thing. And someone that I used to work with in a previous life got in touch to say that they were creating the UK's first digital bank. And could I come and talk to them about how mortgages might look in a digital world, bearing in mind that no such thing existed anywhere in the UK, that digital mortgages had never been done before. So it was kind of a blank sheet of paper exercise to say, if you were going to design a truly customer obsessed, truly digital, in-app only mortgage process, could it be done and what would it look like? And we did it. We spent 2 years building this most amazing customer journey. For anybody who doesn't know, Atom Bank, they were the UK's first app only bank, the first kind of digital bank, and very traditional balance sheet setup. So they take in retail savings and they lend it out in mortgages and SME lending. So we created this amazing customer journey, and everyone told me I was absolutely crazy. All of my peer group said, customers will not do a mortgage in an app. It's like, it's just so alien. It'll be really hard for mortgage intermediaries to recommend this because there isn't an equivalent option. This is really hard. Like, why would you even think about doing this thing? And after 2 years of designing and building and testing, we went live and we did £1 billion of completions in our first year, £1 billion in mortgages, which was just amazing. And our first straight through mortgage was from a mortgage intermediary who pressed submit on their application and the customer had their mortgage offer within 14 seconds. And the mortgage intermediary actually rang in to say, the customer is still sitting in my office and just got their offer in app. Is this a mistake? This can't be right. It shouldn't be this easy. And that it was amazing. It was such an amazing thing to do. What I found really difficult though was that was such a fab success story, and Atom still deliver that kind of service now, and they've gone on to do amazing things since I left 4.5 years ago. But you've got this kind of moment of absolute joy in this mortgage process, but the whole purpose of getting your mortgage is to buy a house. Like, nobody actually just goes to get a mortgage just to have a mortgage sake and 30 years of debt to worry about. The purpose of getting your mortgage is to have this, you know, to buy your dream home or to move for whatever reason you need to. And the rest of that experience didn't mirror what I'd created. And I was so frustrated that we had this one moment of 14 seconds of pure joy that was in the middle of what felt like 22 weeks of absolute, you know, no control, no transparency, no digitization, and out of my control. So this became a bit of a mission to say, well, why can't we apply that same principle to the rest of the home buying journey? So we were part of the home buy and selling group, who you know really, really well, and they asked me if I could look at it. They kind of set me off on this path to say, having done this digital mortgage, could you look at the rest of the journey? Can it be digitized?
And you've been the chair of the technology subgroup of the home buying and selling group, and I think through that you've sort of flushed out, I guess, the things that you see need to be different. And I'd like to come back to that. But can I just, because I think you perfectly put your finger on how it's good to improve a bit of the process. But frankly, unless you improve the whole of the process, all you're doing really is giving the consumer, the end user, a glimpse of the art of the possible, but not actually the benefit of it. So, I think there are probably some people who would say it's still a complicated process. It's a risky process. It just takes time. So, you know, all this, you know, talk of, oh, it could be so much better. It could be like Norway. You know, we could buy in a couple of weeks. But, you know, people say, well, it's a different system. And, you know, you need to take your time over this. Do you see, what would you say would be the achievable vision for what a consumer would experience? I mean, you know, without having to kind of worry too much about the caveats, what, you know, how much better if someone were just listening to this and thinking, okay, so what could my experience of buying a house look like? What would you say?
Yeah, it's interesting. So we, as a nation, and being very generalistic, we are very obsessed with how much houses cost, how much house prices go up and down, and by how long it takes to buy a house. And that's what we measure. We measure our house prices going up or down, and we measure how long does it take to get your completion through, when actually you look at all of the really good retail, health, financial services, other industries measures of what a good customer experience is. And good customer experience is transparency, control, understanding, confidence in the process, trust, all of the things that lead to an outcome. And the outcome might be metric driven, but doesn't start with being a metric driven. It's actually giving the customer the thing they need to do the thing that they want to do in the best way possible. The output of that is that the customer should have complete and utter control and confidence and trust and transparency in what they're buying and in what this process is going to look like, and have some visibility of where they are in the process and what's going to happen next. But there is nothing to stop us doing someone accepting their offer on their property to exchange and contracts in 15 days if we fixed all of the other things that need fixing. But that number is an output number. It's not the thing that we should be driving to. It should be up to the customer when they want to exchange and when they want to move. They should have choice over those things.
I think that's absolutely spot on in terms of we don't want to kind of, you know, say it must be 2 weeks to buy is the aim. It, as you say, it's what does good look like for the, you know, for somebody buying, and it's at their pace. But at their pace might be quick if that's what they want to do. But it's the bit of control that's key in that, isn't it? So stepping through it, control at the in the first phase. What does that look like? You know, when I'm you know actually interested in a property, not just sort of, you know, cruising around on the internet, but I'm actually interested in a property and want to commit. What does kind of, you know, transparency and control at that stage look like? Does it mean I've got every last piece of information I could possibly want about the property as you know, to make the buying decision, or can I leave some of that over until later?
that it had different flavours of it, isn't it? Because what's important to you when you're buying your property is very different to what might be important to me. And it's hard to get to that level of personalisation, a kind of real hyper personalisation. So I guess you have to start with something that meets, you know, your kind of 80-20 rule, and that you've got 80% of the stuff that would be important to almost everyone, and at least try and fix those kind of building blocks and those foundational bits. And we don't even have that today. So I think once you get to that, you start getting to a point where you can start layering in nuances of, well, we can start surfacing these things because it's important to this group of people, even if it's not important to everyone. But at the moment, we're still kind of working on that base case of what should everyone know at the beginning. But also there's a bit of a kind of operating model hearts and minds to be won, because again, it's, you know, the industry's grown up in such a way, and the industry is very fragmented. The journey from estate agent through mortgage intermediary, mortgage lender, valuer, conveyancer is not joined together. And the way that that process has evolved over time means that actually we've kind of back-ended quite a lot of the things that are really important. So, and I know this from my mortgage lending days, that you get your mortgage application and somebody's already fallen in love with the property, they're emotionally committed, they're financially committed, they've invested a lot of time and kind of emotional energy and heart into that process, and they apply for their mortgage, and then they think that's them almost done, like that's the final hurdle, and that getting your mortgage offer is your confetti woohoo moment. Mm-hmm. When actually, from a lender's perspective, that's the point where you're going, now we're instructing the conveyancer, mm-hmm. and that's when we find out all of the real things that we really needed to know. So there's a bit of a, you know, flipping an entire process on its head, and that's a wholesale change, and that's, you know, big and scary, and takes a lot of imagination and a lot of unraveling of the way that we already work, and our systems and our people and our target operating models are set up to work the way things are done today, and trying to envisage that in a completely different way is hard. It's really big and it feels scary, and it's, you know, like banks trying to turn around. We always said, like, trying to turn around a tanker, trying to digitize a bank, and that's what this feels like. We're trying to take not just one bit of the industry, but lots of the industry with us, and those bits of the industry are fragmented and siloed.
So the information up front, as you say, you can't predict everyone's needs. You know, do I need to know how many dog walkers there are nearby, etc.? Maybe not. But you'll satisfy a lot of people's interests and needs in terms of whether I'm interested in buying this property, if you give them 80% of the information is available to them to sift through. But also, as you clearly articulated, there's a need to know this is going to happen, because you build up that commitment, both emotional, probably the most important, but also financial, right? You start paying people's fees, etc. So that commitment is on the assumption that it's going to happen. But what, you know, I think it really, you reminded me, is that a lot of people probably don't realize the risks of it not happening, because, you know, of a surprise that they then get advised is more than a surprise. It actually means you can't get, you know, the mortgage offer that you had can't be now fulfilled. So the information up front is for two needs, really. One is, for you to actually understand, so you can make a buying decision, but also so that people can make unconditional mortgage offers, and your conveyancer can, you know, quickly, as soon as they're instructed, say, yeah, this is a runner, or you know, actually, I think you need to be aware of something, because that deals with your need to know quickly that this is something that you're committed to, even if you haven't got to exchange yet, or, you know, completion. Obviously, that's super clear. So that's one of the whys in terms of, you know, making information more available. What about the other? You talked about transparency through the process. What difference can you see there? Because at the moment, it feels like the, you know, it's not just the control over the speed, but it's also, you know, people not knowing what's going on a lot of the time, and you know, chasing each other, both professionals chasing each other, but also, you know, consumers chasing each other. I mean, you know, here in Land Registry, we get more calls from citizens, as we call them, because we're in the public sector, trying to find out what's going on, even though they're represented by a conveyancer, than way more calls than, you know, people actually making applications direct. So, you know, they're just trying to find out what's going on. What is that a problem? And is technology able to kind of help with that?
Well, it's definitely an efficiency problem for the industry. I think if we put together how many hours are spent on each person in the transaction having to find information, having to then key that information into their own system, having to check that information based on their own quality assurance or compliance or whatever you need to do for your own PI cover. And again, every bit of the industry has their own version and their own interpretation of what that looks like and how they do it. And then, you know, we don't have an easy way of collecting that kind of source of the truth, as in the primary source of the data and the information that we need, and sharing it in a way that makes it easy to evidence where it came from and how trustable that piece of data is. So this is why we're very reliant right now on paper and forms, because that's how we've solved that trust issue for ourselves. So if you need to see your title, you go and you collect that title and you review it and you take out the information that you need for your bit of the transaction and you key that into your system. If I'm the mortgage lender, I need slightly different information out there, but I have to go and get my version of the title and download it or collect it from wherever I'm collecting it from, and then do my bit of the transaction with it. And that's just hugely inefficient. But from the consumer's perspective, they can't see those two processes because they're two individual processes that have different rules and different governance and different ways of working, and there's no visibility of that. So again, if I did my analogy back to my previous industries, like air traffic control, we don't have an air traffic control. We don't have a centralized tower that we all connect to where you can track the flight and see who had it before, where it's on its way to, whereabouts in the process it is, how long it's going to take to get to its next destination. We don't have that in our industry. It just doesn't exist. And that's an infrastructure system. Like, we don't have market infrastructure in the way that we have in other industries. And that's one of the reasons that change has been so difficult, because that infrastructure just doesn't exist. And it's really hard to build it. If you think about how other industries have evolved, they've been doing this since, you know, since the internet launched in, you know, 90s. So they've had 30 years run at it. And we're starting from a standing start, trying to create something that doesn't exist in a very complex, very high tension, lots of interested parties, lots of transaction parties, and lots of different regulators, different trade associations, different representative bodies. We have 6 government departments who are all responsible for different bits of property data, trying to align all of those people around. We need to create an infrastructure that works for everyone is a really big ask. So it's no surprise that as an industry, we have not much transparency. We can't really see what's going on. We're all head down trying to do our bit of the process. For the consumer, they've got absolutely no chance of fighting their way through there. And there are technology solutions who've tried to fix that. We've got, you know, View This solution and kind of centralizing some of the milestones and case tracking type solutions. But there's not really much out there that can see the whole journey and give you that air traffic control, complete oversight view of where everyone is in the process.
So I love the air traffic control analogy, because obviously air traffic control only works because people talk literally the same structured language, don't they? They, you know, internationally, yes, across the whole world, you know, there is a unique call sign for each airline. There is a unique call sign for each, you know, airport, and they have very standardized language. So hopefully we can build and not break that analogy. So you talked there about how the information needs to be something that can be trafficked in a standard way, but also trusted. So you know, again, I guess in air traffic control terms, you know that people are working to a standard because they're trained to that standard. So you know, you trust that the you know, when the pilots are instructed to do this, that's what they will do. So you know, that's how that system works, and what can appear chaotic is actually, you know, very busy and safe, because everyone's working to that to that common standard in a trusted way. So how do you make that happen? Because as you said, you've got lots of technology startups and very mature businesses and lots of investment coming in. How do you go from something where maybe lots of people share the same objective, but it's you kind of need to stop it being just ideas and being creating a marketplace that works in a way that where it's harmonized and standardized. How do you achieve that, and how do you draw on what's happened in the finance sector, for example, as a sort of model?
Yeah, that's where the travel analogy works really well, because if you want to go and set up a new airline, you have to connect to air traffic control because it's the only place that you can go to do that function. So you have no choice but to connect. You have to use the same three-letter codes for airports because that is that is the global standard. It's the global naming convention. You have to have the same scanners for scanning baggage and your ticket on your smartphone and all of those things. And those things are just given. Those standards absolutely underpin everything that works in the travel industry and makes that journey really slick. And the fact that you can book your travel on your iPhone and travel with nothing more than your iPhone and your passport and get through all of the things that you need to do because they're all scanned the same way. So for us, that actually starts with data and data standards. And that's kind of where we've got to. That was one of the things we identified. So when I was asked by Home Buying and Selling Group to say, could we digitize the end to end? Of course, the answer is always yes, because you can digitize anything in today's world and the technology exists to do it. But for that to work, we actually need to separate the technology from the infrastructure in the ecosystem, because technology only works if there are good standards to start with, and technology only works when you have good data. And it's almost like the industry's been waiting for this kind of technology silver bullet. And I'm really sorry to burst everyone's bubble, but it doesn't exist. Technology is not the thing that's going to fix this. And we actually need to change that mindset across the industry and stop talking about technology as some kind of panacea or some kind of solution.
I think what you're saying is that the technology exists, actually, because this isn't, it's literally not rocket science. I mean, we're not, and it's not even AI, we're just talking about moving information around and making it available at the right point to the right people for the right purpose in a trusted way. So, it's a kind of dawning moment, isn't it? That, we're waiting for technology. No, the technology exists. What I think you're saying is the hard bit is the adoption in a way that makes the technology usable and, people get the benefit from it. It's actually the kind of the way the industry absorbs and uses that and works together to create the outcome that matters, not really, because it's fairly humdrum, the technology that would be deployed. Is that fair?
Yeah, no, absolutely. And if you, like I say, you look at any other industry where digitization has happened, and this is where we need to make the distinction between what we're trying to fix is digitizing the industry, not creating more technology for technology's sake. But that means adopting a digital mindset. And I'm not a technologist. I kind of sit in the middle of business and technology. I just happen to be an evangelist for what technology can do. And I've used technology to create other digital processes and seen them work really well. So I understand the concept of how you take really good technology and hang it together in a way that makes a process do what you need to do. But the thing that actually starts that process is the digital bit of it. And digital actually means that the information that you need should be data. And that's the bit that we're not good at. We use forms, we use paper, we use PDFs, we use contracts, we talk, even when we talk about all of the things that we do to get a transaction from A to completion, we talk about all of the forms and the things that need signing and physical documents. And that's not data, that's not digital. So actually the thing that the kind of the big gap that we're missing is that we need to digitize the data at source, and we've got huge amounts of data. That's not just land registry, that's every piece of property data that sits in public, private, local authorities, the industries creating, that lenders create to make the mortgage offer happen, all of that data should be digital at source. And that means it needs to be structured in a certain way. And without getting too technical, it just means that actually, if we all agreed that a title number and an address should look like this, feel like this, and be in this format, and have this stamp attached to it so you could see where it came from, and that that piece of data could be shared between all of the platforms in a really consistent way, as in we all talk air traffic control language. We all use the same way of describing that data and describing the provenance of that data. Actually, what you do is take out all of those horrible inefficiencies and the need for all of those swivel chair processes and all of those opaque things that are happening, because you've got a human who's having to do something that actually the machine should be able to do.
So we need digital data. We need that data to be in a standard that means that anybody knows when they transmit it or receive it, what format it's going to be in, so they know how they're going to be able to process it, and because that's how you create accessibility for everybody back to the consumer. You know, my conveyancer, my surveyor, whatever, is only going to be able to help me understand the property or help me understand the, you know, what progress has been made if they're receiving information from others, which is what they need to, in a standard format. Can I question something else though? So back to the air traffic control example, that's the information in that example, in that analogy, is, you know, standard codes for you know, standard language for, you know, what I'm doing in the air. But I also use standard frequencies. It's important, obviously, that I make sure that I'm not using the same frequency for Gatwick and Heathrow, right? Because, you know, all sorts of problems. So that's the connectivity. To use another analogy in electricity terms, you know, the information is 240 volts, if you like, the stuff that goes through the wires, but we need a standard plug, at least in this country, and standard socket. Is that important, and why is it important, and what effect would that have on the market, or the absence of it mean on the market?
So I think if you ripped up everything that we had today, if you got to do what I did at Atom Bank and literally start with a fresh sheet of paper, you wouldn't create what we have today. You would start with a grid, an air traffic control, however you want to describe it, like a national grid of, here's all of the different places the property data is going to sit. Here are all of the different actors. How do we plug them all into something where they can connect and see each other and see where that data has come from? And in technology terms, there are lots of different ways to do that. So we have really smart solutions in the UK with people like CodeJute, who have used distributed ledger technology to solve that and to connect lots of parties to one messaging system. Most people would be familiar with Sprift or MasterCard, which is how we do that for payments and how we move money between different banks. It's a messaging platform, and it's a way, like, all the banks in the UK don't all go and individually connect to every other bank in every other country. Everyone connects to the Swift payment network, and that sets the standard for the messaging and how things are structured. And again, like, that we could build that for property, but who would want to build it when you've got so many public sources of data, so many private sources of data, and whole industries that have grown up based on the target operating model we have today? But that would be one way to fix it, is to connect, to create a connectivity hub. The other way to do it is that we do what we did in open banking, and you create almost an ecosystem, which is a bit like a directory in a trust framework, where you go, here are all of your primary sources of data. Here are all of the third parties and the permissions that they hold to collect and share that data and to do interesting things with it. And here's how you recognize who those people are, whether that's they have a digital signature, or they have, you can have things like public key infrastructure, and this is getting really technical, but there are ways to go, this is Land Registry, and this is Maria Harris. Here's their identity, so that you recognize them for who they are, and you can provenance that data came from them. And that's how open banking or open finance works. And there's a trust framework that hangs that together. Or the way that we're doing it currently today with the people who are using open data and trying to make this data smart is that we've just agreed an open API standard, and we've collectively collaborated on a verifiable provenance, which means that we attach a claim, we attach a label to our data to say how trusted is this. Is it a scale of 1 to 5, 1 being my seller told me that it's freehold, we don't really trust that, through to I've got a document, I collected it from an official source, I've got something digital that I can attach to it, and then level 5 would be you're perfect, we got this direct from Land Registry and it had something attached to it, so we know. So we're using that labelling system at the moment, and that's how digital identity started. It's actually the OpenID Connect verifiable provenance that we're using. So there's lots of different ways to tackle that. The thing that we're missing is a collective agreement on what we want to do to make that work.
I think what you were saying was that we can't start again. We are already at the place where people are using, to my electricity analogy, different shape sockets and plugs. But you yes. can bring in adapters. So you could bring in a sort of, you know, an organization that was, you know, or business that was selling you a universal adapter that said, look, I'll take the hard yards out of making you connect, but connectivity is still the key, right? So, it, you know, because people come together in random permutations, don't they, on a transaction. I choose my lawyer, the other side chooses their lawyer, et cetera, and estate agents are professionals. So their systems must... I think what you're saying is their systems must hook up, because otherwise you don't get a system at all and the information can't flow. It doesn't matter whether it's all standard. So, but there are ways of solving that problem. And it may be that, you know, ideally you'd have got everyone to use the same standard APIs in the first place, but, you know, the kind of ship has partly sailed on that. You can, you know, bring in a, people can sell you adapters. But also you could work, I think you're saying, you could work towards, even if you need an adapter today, you could work towards adopting standard, you know, sockets and plugs in from here on. So we've got standard data, make sure that that's trusted, make sure that systems, that the data is digitized, because it doesn't make, if you haven't got it up, you know, available up front in the first place, then of course, you know, it doesn't matter if it's standardized. Once it's, you know, kind of being consumed, you won't get that benefit of people being able to see it, you know, early in the process and know that they can go ahead. Trust in that information. How do you transmit that? You know, the paper had embossing and wax seals and things like that. You know, how do you transmit that in a digital world? And connectivity, how do you make sure that everyone's systems can actually, you know, plug and play and the information flows through that will give you that transparency? So that's the theory. What is happening today? Where are we up to? You are part of the Open Property Data Association. Tell us about that, and tell us about... you know, how that sort of body works in other sectors, and how does that drive change?
So on the back of the request from the Home Buying Selling Group to start this, you know, can we digitize it? And then working through some of these really big things that we're missing in terms of infrastructure. And we would do that, you know, this was a voluntary thing. So did about 2.5 years off the side of my dining room table, corralling lots of very clever, very technical people, and getting them in a virtual room to say, these are some of the challenges we have. We can't create a new national grid for this. So what can we do? Like, what is the art of the possible with what we have today? And we got this whole group of amazing companies to all contribute their time, technology resource, development resource, and collaborate really openly in a way that I've never seen across the industry ever. And from all different parts of the industry, from estate agents, portals, through lenders, mortgage intermediaries, valuers, conveyancers, technology companies, CRM systems, like we had the whole gamut of everyone in the room, and they all collaborated to say, let's at least start with identifying if these are the pieces of data that should be available at the beginning of the transaction based on what's in the trading standards material information guidance, what's in the BASB, what's in the TA forms, what's in the PIQs. Let's pull all of that into one place and actually create a dictionary of here are all of the things that everybody needs to get the process from A to B. And it might be the 80% rule. We might not have got everything, but it's a blooming good start. And it's the things that impact most transactions and cause delays further down the line. So we took those 350 or so data points and we worked out where is the primary source of that data. Is it digital today or not? And of course, the answer is mainly not, because not much data is digital in our industry today. Do we have third parties who are already collecting this data and doing something with it in a way that we could represent? And if so, could we agree a common language for when we collect that data and share that data, that we all represent it in the same way? And that's just a data standard. It's like a data dictionary, and it's called a schema. And it's literally just a way of representing, this is a title, this is what it should look like, this is where it should come from. And if it's coming from a third party, this is how you know you can trust that third party to represent that data on your behalf. But when we share that title number, we all share it in exactly the same format. And we've used a standard language called JSON, which is just it's the thing that the internet's written on. And it's kind of one of the most common ways of writing a data standard. And actually, Land Registry use that in their local land charges project when they're digitizing their local authority search data. They convert that into JSON, which is one of the reasons we chose it, because then we'll have interoperability when all of that data becomes digital. So we created this JSON schema, and all of these people worked on it. We made it completely free and open source. It sits on a developer portal called GitHub, which is free for everyone in the whole world. So you go in and you find the data standard, and then when you are creating your data and API in your system, you use that standard to then go, this is how we're going to represent it, and this is how we're going to share that data in our API. And all of our firms who collaborated with us on that for about 2.5 years voluntarily decided, actually, why do we not just make this live? We'll put it in our own systems. We'll put it in live transactions. We've done lots of work with different government departments, so with DPMSG, DLUHC, Department of Business and Trade on the Smart Data Council, to explain, this is what we think we need. This is how we're going to prove it. But let us actually just crack on and show you how this works. So that's what led to the Open Property Data Association. Those firms agreed that we should become the custodians of that data standard. We should commit to that data standard being free and open source for everyone in the industry, but that our members would continue to work on that standard and agree how we do things like trust and provenance, and to work with all of the departments that we need to, industry and government and public and private, to then work through all of the, what data did we digitize first? As you digitize that data, how do we write a standard for it? And how do we create those adapters and plugs so the industry can then take that data and do good things with it for consumers? So that's what the OPDA is. So we are the ones who manage the schema and create the plugs and all the things that help the industry to use it.
How would you sum up the aims of the association? What's it for? The association itself, not the kind of members. Does it have a constitution that says it? What its aims are?
Yeah, we do. We have constitution. We have articles of association. We have everything that you'd expect a trade association to have. And our mission is to digitize the property journey for the benefit of consumers and to get consumers access to the data that they need in a way that is smart, so they can make better decisions, have better experiences, but also to then use that data to do whatever else they want to do with it. Because actually, we've kind of started with the use case of buying a property, because that was the thing that we were asked to look at first. But actually, as a homeowner, if I had access to the property data and my energy consumption and my energy efficiency and lots of things around the construction of my property, there's actually huge amounts of things that I could then do with that data when we make it smart, around having better products, having access to green finance, having ways to improve the energy consumption of my property. There's just a whole bunch of life cycle stuff that comes under. So that is our mission, is to say, let's digitize the property data and create things for consumers that make their life better.
If I was back in my old role as a lawyer, sitting there, I used to do commercial, which we'll come on to, but if I was sat next to somebody who was doing residential conveyancing, I know what they would be saying now is, we've been talking about e-conveyancing or digitizing conveyancing, making a really simple journey for 2-3 decades now, and it hasn't happened. And I'd probably be thinking, I don't really know why, but maybe there's something fundamental about the way things do or do not work in the property market, cultural, legal, whatever it is, that means it just is not really likely to happen. What would you say to, and I wouldn't call them cynics, because they've got reason to, they've got reason really to think, yeah, I'll believe it when I see it. So what would you say to them that they should, you know, think, if you like, but also do? What should they do if they want to see that happen, if they want to be part of the change, as a lawyer, as you know, not as a systems builder, but as a lawyer, or you know, or a bunch of, you know, surveying firm or estate agents, what would you say they should do?
I do understand, and I do understand that people are carrying the scars of lots of things that have been tried and not worked before. And let's say a lot of those things didn't work before, because unless you fix your infrastructure to start with, you can layer on as much technology as you like, and it's never going to do what you need to do. And I understand that that's been disappointing for lots of people, and they've been through that change curve many, many times. So I do understand that. I think what is different this time is there is a proliferation of data and data standards question. So if we went back to 2020, when we actually the government announced the UK National Data Strategy, and it's worth going back and looking at that if you've not seen it before, that was actually the first commitment to say we are going to digitize data, and we are going to digitize it to a standard. And the global standard for data was something called FAIR. And fair data standard just means that data should be structured in a way that it's findable, accessible, interoperable, and reusable, all of the things that we need. And that is already UK National Data Strategy and has already been implemented in lots of places around the world, like Norway, which is a really good example, because they've done that and digitized a fair data standard and made that data accessible. So that's one of, that was kind of one of the first starting points, and helpfully happened as we were, it was announced as we were starting that journey. But lots of other things have happened since then, and it's almost like everyone's waiting for legislation or mandation or for someone to tell them to do this, in the same way that we did with open banking, when this CMA kind of told the nine banks, like, you need to do this, and we, you know, make these fintech firms able to access the data that consumers need to do payments and to do open banking type solutions and things. And that worked because it was mandated. But actually, if we already know this is better for customers, it's better for industry, it actually frees up our resource to do the things that we're meant to be doing, which is that specialist legal advice, talking to our customers, instead of doing the thing we're doing today, which is passing bits of paper and telephone tennis and chasing things constantly and lots of things that add no value whatsoever. Actually doing this just adds huge amounts of value back into the process, because it frees us up to do the things that we're actually trained to do.
You've sold it to me, but you're also saying, you know, there needs to be a bit of oomph behind it. And this time it will be different, because, you know, there's a lot more collaboration and a lot more unity of you know, thought. I mean, it's, you know, part of the Digital Property Market Steering Group's vision that this should happen. So everybody has, you know, all the kind of key stakeholders across both commercial and residential have, you know, have signed up to this as an objective. But what should I do if I'm a partner in a law firm? What do I do? What do I look out for? How do I be part of the answer? How do I get on the train, as it were? Because I want to go on the journey. I want to bring that benefit to my clients. What am I looking out for?
So I think the first thing is actually just to stop thinking about life in terms of documents and forms, which is actually the biggest mindset shift that the industry could make, is to stop relying on paper and forms and start thinking about, where does that data come from? How do I get that data in a way that is usable and trustable in my own organization? But even some of the behavioral change just on the process itself is, we're now saying that someone who's about to sell their property or thinking of selling should create their digital property pack right at the beginning and instruct their conveyancer on day one, and preferably before they even list. And that's a big change. It's a big change for customers, but it's a big change for industry as well. And that's a way that conveyancers could actually make a difference tomorrow, is to start getting sellers ready to list their property for sale before a buyer gets anywhere near it. Just to go back to the other things that are changing. So, I mean, we haven't spoken much about DPMSG and kind of their role in this, but we've got, you know, DPMSG covering all of the industries that are involved in the property market and working through how do we start getting cohesion on some of these approaches and on how we start driving adoption. We've also got things like the trading standards guidance, which has been hugely helpful. And we've seen that now rolled into things like TA, the Law Society's TA forms, which is hugely helpful. So we're starting to see bits of that now feed in. But we've got the Smart Data Bill, which is currently going through the House of Lords. That's now had its second sitting. We've got Open Finance has publicly been announced that the Open Banking Implementation Entity has moved to Open Banking Limited, and we're going to move from Open Banking to Open Finance. We've got a Digital Identity Trust and Attributes Framework. So if you were a lawyer looking at all of this swell of direction of travel at all points one way, and everything that fits all of the different bits of you do, not just the property data, but the identity, the money, changing of money, the Bank of England's plans to move to atomic settlement, to digital settlement, it is all heading in one direction and will impact every single thing that you do. So it's probably good to take that step back and actually see all of these things together all move those steps in the right direction and get us to one point.
I think that's a really good place to end, actually, because people have often said to me, you know, in simple terms, what needs to happen? And unfortunately, I don't think I answer their question, because what I do is I then say, there's a long list of things that need to happen. And I make the mistake, if you like, of describing what needs to happen. And miss the point that the reason lots of little things, sometimes little, sometimes big things need to happen is because we're moving from one way of working to another. So there's almost like a long list of unpickings and of changes that what we're moving to, I think you've described very eloquently, is actually relatively simple. The problem is the journey is complicated. So a lot of, you know, individual things need to happen. And as you've said, you know, you add them up and there are a lot of things that are happening and there's a lot of alignment around those. So that's where I get my belief. But I do understand how some people who, you know, don't spend, you know, and rightly so, don't spend too much time thinking about what this all adds up to, you know, hear about discrete efforts and think, well, you know, that why is that going to move the dial? And I think you've, you know, summed up very well how moving the dial is hard work in lots of different areas, as long as they add up to something that is a whole, you know, move to something where, you know, you have that information up front, free flowing through systems in a way that is trusted. That's the truly transformational thing. That's the outcome. Yeah. But the difficulty is in moving from the system we have today, built up over many decades, even 160 years in our case, to something that is, you know, smooth and akin to the finance industry that you worked in. Maria, thank you very much. It's been a pleasure and a delight and a, you know, revelation, really. The way you clearly express this is fantastic. Thanks very much for your time. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
This is Property with a View, available on all the usual platforms. Please do leave a review and a rating.